The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Keep Calm and Crown On, it's brought to you by Minute with Mary. Minute with Mary, of course, is your one-stop shop for all things makeup and skincare, especially right now in the month of November. So I have a lot of bundles, one happening each week, and actually the week of Thanksgiving, I'm going to be having three holiday bundles drop. So if you're in the market for any kind of makeup, skincare, please, please take a look at minutewithmary.com or shoot me a message on social media. I'd love to hook you up.
My dear Charles, there exists no greater compliment than to be called a prince among men. Such a person earns his title with his ability to lead and inspire. Elusive virtues to which you must reach and rise. And it grieves me to say that you are not working hard enough to reach and to rise. The choice of a woman was the issue around which the last Prince of Wales came to grief. And it's astonishing to me that 40 years after the abdication, you're making so little attempt to conceal your infatuation for another man's wife. How could you contemplate such ruin and disappointment to yourself, to your family, to me? Must I remind you again of the importance of building your destiny with some sweet and innocent, well-tempered gal with no past, knows the rules, and will follow the rules. Someone with whom you can make a fresh start and build a new life. One that people will love as a princess and in due course as queen. This is your duty now, your most important task. You're more than a man, more than a prince. And one day, dear boy, you shall be king. And now to the sea.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Keep Calm and Crown On. It's a podcast dedicated to the crown on Netflix, so grab your best cup of tea and let's get royal. And welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I am glad to be back.
Oh, aren't we all? Did you have tea when you watched the first episode of The Crown? I know I sure did. We shared that, of course, with our whole Patreon community.
Yes.
Had my tea in my BB-8 cup, but we're here.
We're here. We're ready to go. We're talking about some Crown, and what an episode to begin the season four of The Crown. I know we'll get into
bam,
it.
Bam, bam, thank you, ma'am.
We'll get into that and everything. But your initial impressions, Mary, just what are your thoughts about this? And are you glad to be back with everybody that joined the Nerd Clan this podcast?
Yes, 100%. We're so thankful, of course, for our friends for making this all possible. In a nutshell, how do I feel? Blown away.
Too soon.
It's not too soon.
Goodness gracious. Where is my shame button?
I went there.
Oh my goodness.
I went there, friends.
That's aggressive. That is aggressively aggressive,
hey,
Mary.
You know what? It's season four, man. Bringing out the big guns.
Wait, here it is.
Shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of that thrown around.
Somebody's touching my stuff.
Just kids, probably.
Yes.
Thank you, 2020. So before we get into this episode, of course, though, we wanted to remind you all to subscribe to the podcast, find us on social media at maryandblake.com. You can head on over there to see all the other podcasts and blogs that we're covering. This Is Us, The Potterverse, Outlander. We've got everything.
We've got everything going on.
You can find it all at maryandblake.com. And of course, we want to take a brief moment to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com who made this possible.
Yeah, you guys rock, man. You are the ones who did this. You are the ones who make Keep Calm and Crown On happen.
That's right.
And that's why we're here doing it for you guys.
Yes.
That's why we're binging this entire season in 3 days.
There's going to be so much tea. Can we get crumpets tomorrow or scones?
Yes.
Do they eat scones? I feel like crumpets would be a thing.
I feel like scones is a thing.
Okay.
Scones could totally be a thing.
Scones with butter and jam? Yes.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm drooling. No joke, guys. We are binging over the next 3 days. So if we look a little tired, if we sound a little crazy, if we come out a little British at the end of this week.
Mary will come out British.
Oh,
I will not.
No doubt.
I'm going to go more Boston.
Whenever I'm near people who have foreign accent, any kind of accent.
Yeah, you adopt that accent.
It's not even like I'm trying to blend in with them. My mouth just is like crazy. But if I start sounding like Diana, what do you mean? Oh, here we go.
I'm a tree.
Oh. All right, let's get into the show.
Let's do it. Well, the title for this one is called Gold Stick. Now, I know, Mary, you're looking at the audience and we're recording this, and you're looking at me with this really weird face.
Yeah.
It's like a Robert De Niro face, and you have no idea what that is. And that's okay. Because Gold Stick
actually... Keep thinking Gold Member.
Gold Member. That's actually Gold Finger, sorry. Gold Stick actually comes from one of Lord Mountbatten's numerous honorary positions.
Oh, of course.
He was the Colonel of the Lifeguards in Gold Stick in Waiting, which
Colonel
is a
Colonel of the Lifeguards?
Yes, which
like
is
like Baywatch?
No, it's... doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's essentially a fancy title for ceremonial bodyguard.
Oh, okay. Oh my gosh, how weird.
Right.
How weird. Wasn't he the actor? Wasn't he the king of the royal guard who wore gold in Game of Thrones?
No, he was not. He was not the head of the king's guard. No, that was Jaime. Jaime was head of the king's guard.
Oh, Jaime. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
No,
all right.
He was Jaime's father.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I just knew that there was a lot of gold worn.
And as Tywin, he did wear a lot of gold. He had a lot of gold.
Yes.
And he was the hand to the king.
I'm not going to lie. It was a little weird hearing his voiceover being like, you need to marry someone. Because I'm like, is this Tywin Lannister again?
Oh, I love Giles Dance. He is the best. He is the best at whatever he does.
He literally could make any young man marry any woman just by giving that talk. It's happened in two great shows. Okay, continue.
All right, the director was Benjamin Caron. This actually should sound familiar to all of you who are listening to Keep Calm and Crown On because he has directed many episodes of The Crown, including Scientia Potentia Est, Assassins, Beryl, Matrimonium, Mystery Man, Olding, Margaretology, Abervan, Bubbykins, and now Gold Stick.
Love
and
it.
At least from the episodes that I have watched, Benjamin Caron is quite a director.
Oh,
we actually, if you watched the video earlier, we saw that shot of Charles as he's waiting to get off of the plane, and it's just the
sunlight,
the silhouette,
of the pink and the clouds, and the silhouette of just looking down.
That is sunset porn at its best.
Truly.
And the writer, of course, was the showrunner, Peter Morgan, who has written every single one of these episodes.
Keep him busy, man.
Yeah, he don't mess around. Mm-mm-mm. And it's cool because it's a funny thing when you have just one writer.
It's a little bit funny.
There are, I'm sure, staff writers, but when one guy is responsible for the whole thing, it's like an auteur type deal where he is responsible for the look, the feel, and the writing. Mm. Kind of like Nick Pizzolatto on True Detective or whatever. In those instances, it's a good thing, and yet it can be a very bad thing.
Okay.
But I feel like in this case, so far, it's been very good to have Peter Morgan just be the sole writer of each episode.
I've been down. I've enjoyed it.
So what is your corgi's rating? Oh, God, we forgot to get the stuffed corgi. Oh.
Plague. Fail. I'm going on Amazon. I'm giving it a 4.9. I mean, it is just shy of perfection. I don't really fully know why it's not perfection, aside from the fact that I need more Margaret in my life.
Yes.
And less Anne. So that's why it's a 4.9.
I feel like the show is telling you it needs less Anne, but that's just me.
Seriously.
Because there's a big thing that happens. Well, we'll get into that.
We'll get there. We'll get there. She, you know, she can disappear. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh.
I'll go Blake.
What?
Your turn.
Wait,
the Corgi rating. I gave a 4.9.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were on the GPGs. I'm sorry.
Buddy, where you been?
Oh, man.
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
For me, it's a 4.8. I agree with you, Mary. Yeah. It is just shy of perfect for the crown. There is one particular reason why that I think it's just shy of perfect, but this is pretty damn close.
Which one's your favorite? Which Corgi? All tan with white? Or black, tan, and white.
I would say, well, the black, tan, and white looks like a beagle.
Or do you want the cheapest one?
Cheapest one.
There we go. It's tan and white.
All right. Tan and white it is. There's one particular thing that I think happens. We'll get into that. Aside from that, though, this is an exquisite opening to season four. And if this is a low water mark, then we are...
I think this is my favorite premiere of... The Crown, which I know you've only seen one season of premieres, but like frequently one of my pet peeves is the first one, two, three, even three episodes. So I'm interested to see how the second episode is. This is going to be a real...
Well, it's funny because even though this does feel somewhat episodic, it's not because it takes so many of the strings and so many of the... we got it.
Got a Corgi coming on Wednesday.
So many of the threads that were left open at the end of season three, and it just says, okay, here we go. This is we're getting right back into it. It didn't feel like the art thing. At the beginning of season three.
Fest.
Yeah, like what are we talking about?
The art person.
This gets you right in. Okay, what is your GBG? You're good, bad, and great.
Who ran the world? Girls. Okay, that was so out of tune, but I'm trying. I was trying to go
You're doing the best that you can.
Hey, you know? Margaret Thatcher.
She's your good?
No, just the fact that there are two menopausal women running the world.
Got it, okay.
And you know what? They like each other.
Right now. Things are going to be ending real
quick. But I thought that it was really cute.
If you know English history.
I just think it's cute. I just think it's really cute. I liked this dynamic. I don't think I've seen Elizabeth get excited over meeting somebody.
That is true.
If it wasn't a horse.
Or her past flame where she gets excited.
Yes. Gosh, what was his name?
I don't remember.
Horse guy. Oh, I'm forgetting, but I loved him so much. I missed him. I thought he would be showing up with the horses. I don't know. I just thought she was like making sure the flowers are just right, and they were like, ha ha ha, look at us. Like, we kind of dig each other. I just think it was kind of cute, except that it's the lady from the X-Files.
Gillian Anderson, man.
And I didn't realize it, and now I can't unsee it. But I will unsee it, but I didn't know that was her.
Yeah.
Until I was reading stuff, and I was like, hold on, why are people talking about the X-Files? Holy smokes!
Yeah, that's Scully.
Good.
She's great.
She's
awesome.
She's an amazing actress. She's okay, great. My bad. As I said, I could care less about Princess Margaret right now. Princess Anne, I really wish Princess Margaret was here. But my bad in the sense that it made me feel bad was actually the conversation between Philip and Charles.
Yep.
What are you talking about? You have a father. You have a father. And really, he's just been so crummy to Charles this entire time.
Tobias
Menzies, like, he blows all of these really strong scenes out of the water.
Makes me wanna shout.
I was surprised that you didn't just play "And I."
Oh,
that's your Tobias Menzies song.
Oh my goodness, you are right.
I know I'm right. Where have you been, Bob?
Oh my goodness.
So I don't know. It broke my heart to be in that scene. Here you go. Here, Tobias. This is for you from Blake.
Sorry, continue.
We'll love him now because post season four, he won't be here.
I know, that's so sad. And I'm actually quite sad that Charles Dance is not going to be in the rest of the season, unless there's flashbacks or whatever. I don't know.
We'll figure it all out. So that was my bad in the petty sense of Anne, but in the real sense of how sad I felt and how awkward I felt, how beautiful that was of the men talk. And then my great was just the shooting scenes mixed up with Mountbatten going to the boat. And I didn't know this. I didn't know this history.
Yeah.
Okay. That you knew something was going to happen. I was ready for someone to actually shoot him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you kept hearing the guns and the reloading and all this stuff. So I was prepared. And of course, you saw the person in that tan orange car.
Yep.
I did not know this. I mean, I wasn't born at that point, so
no. I mean, this isn't something that you're learning necessarily about the Troubles, and you're not
learning it in like history class,
right? Yeah, this is not something that is widely taught.
No,
you know, because I mean, it's a big deal.
I mean, maybe if I lived in England or if I really had researched the royals, you know what I mean? Right. I would know, but I'm just Mary growing up in Rhode Island. I didn't know this,
and it's kind of like what we talked about on the Potterverse with. Like Voldemort. By the way, I just have to play this.
I'm Harry freaking Potter.
Where it's just you're too close to it. The history is just there, and it takes time. It takes time to get perspective, and it's not to say. I mean, now the Troubles. You know, the Troubles technically ended with a treaty. What in the late 90s, but. This was in its height, right? And
yeah.
This was 50 years ago. So for you to necessarily know it, I don't think is
out of touch.
Can
we take a brief moment
yeah, sure.
for you, before we go into your GBGs, can we just have a little history moment?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm
because you
happy.
Told me this last night and then I fell asleep.
thank you. I appreciate that.
So as a girl growing up in Rhode Island from the 80s and 90s, I don't really know too much about the IRA.
Right. Well, let's get into what.
I mean, do you want to do your GBGs first?
Yeah. Let's do the GBGs.
Okay.
Let's do the GBGs. First, my good Frances Parker. You know who Frances Parker is?
Nope.
She's the editor.
Oh.
The editor.
Well done.
She has actually edited some of the best episodes of Game of Thrones that there is, as a matter of fact, including. What is it? Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
And she also edited one of my favorite other shows on HBO, Rome.
Oh, I love that show. Another Tobias great.
Also starring
Tobias. She just basically is a Tobias Menzies fan.
Yes, she is.
She's like, oh, he's in there now? Oh, he's on that show? I'm just going to follow him.
And the reason why I think the job that she did was excellent is because of exactly what you said, Mary. It's Mountbatten's death. It was telegraphed. In the writing and in the direction, but I was okay with that because we knew something was going to happen. We
yes.
knew something was up, and the tension just was ratcheting up with every single cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost, in my opinion, it goes to the point of like breaking where you're like, it's just too much. How do we release this? Are they playing with me? And are they being disingenuous? Especially with the clever editing between Mountbatten
yeah.
and how the guns kept going off with Prince Philip
mm-hmm.
and you'd hear the gun, but then it would quickly switch to Prince Philip and you see him
yeah.
with the shotgun.
Yeah, the sound was on the scene with Mountbatten.
Right,
and yet,
right.
Yeah, then we'd go to it.
And it was...
The transition was the shot.
And finally how it all ends up with the three, the two, and then there's a break and then it's underwater and the whole, and like even the shot of underwater was there a couple of times. So you're expecting something. You don't know when it's going to happen.
Not Jaws.
You think it does. And then all of a sudden it doesn't. And then boom,
yes.
It was a masterclass in editing perfectly. And of course that also goes with the writing and the direction.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we can start this season off with such an impactful event.
Mm-hmm.
It will give us an underlying current for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Especially as the Troubles continue and especially as things get ugly. This will always be there. And it gives us personal stakes for the family, for the crown. I loved it. I thought it was excellent. The bad also happens to be an editing thing at the same time.
Uh-oh, Francis.
And I don't think this is an editing problem. I think this is a writing problem necessarily.
Okay.
Which is the transition from Mountbatten's funeral, where they're throwing the dirt onto the camera, which is a great effect. Loved it. But it was a hard, I mean, hard transition from the funeral to all of a sudden it being the horse jumping competition. And I actually thought that the throwing of the dirt was the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then I
same.
I'm like,
was this episode longer than the others?
I don't think so.
Because it did. It made me feel like, oh, there's still more.
But because of that, I was like, whoa. And now we're horse jumping. Wow. Okay. And it's not to say that it didn't build on top of that, but it was just a hot transition.
Agreed.
And I thought that was a little rough. And of course, the great, and I feel like this is kind of cliche to say, but Josh O'Connor playing Charles.
Right.
This kid, he gets it, and he deserves the praise and the cliche and everything that's coming his way. He is the star, in my opinion, of this show right now. And he is making it what it is. You know,
and it's interesting as Americans,
right,
to see a side of Charles that we were not necessarily shown. We were all like taught by our media, love Diana, mourn Diana, hate Charles for being terrible and cheating and, you know, all this stuff. And granted, still, I don't really approve of cheating, but you're able to appreciate a bit more of the fictional Charles's side.
Absolutely.
From his amazing performance.
And I would say specifically because of Josh O'Connor.
Agreed.
Like,
I mean, I'm not going to like be like, oh, Prince. Prince Charles is my favorite.
No. And that may be biased, and that may be an uninformed opinion. I'm still going to feel
Once again, I'm a girl from Rhode Island who was fed by the media.
And that's fine. Like, that's okay.
No, I know.
But the way that he's being portrayed. And yes, of course, there was the great scene when he's yelling and after he finds out about Lord Mountbatten's death and he's at the river and... But the thing that really sold me on this episode was when he was driving away from Diana after he sees her at the fair. Mm. And, you know, they talk and whatever, and he's driving and the camera just sits on him.
Yes.
And you see this, like, you see a whole wave.
Yes.
A whole wave of emotion, shock, and like, okay, wow. And then the sudden transition, well, the subtle transition from him being like, all right, to smiling. And it's the first time you see him smile.
Yes. In a very long time.
Yeah. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was a masterclass in directing, writing, and especially acting. So I am all about the Josh O'Connor life. Now, let's talk briefly about... Do you want to do the history
Briefly. I mean, don't go crazy. Don't go crazy. Or do you want to do that for another episode?
No. I mean, it's very brief.
Okay.
The Troubles essentially was created.
Once again, we're not Irish. So
no, I'm not Irish.
Ireland
and I'm not
listening.
And I am not an expert
British.
In this. So if I get something wrong, please forgive me. This is my basic
Your
knowledge,
memory,
and you know, from history classes and so on. The Troubles were is a series of events and a time in Northern Ireland where there was the Northern Irish. It's part of the United Kingdom, where Ireland itself is not. Northern Ireland was split at the time between Protestants and Catholics. Catholics wanted to be free. The Protestants wanted to stay with England.
So it was like a sandwich of Catholics, like Catholic bread.
yes and no.
Okay.
Regardless, whatever. What ended up happening was the Catholics were rebelling against the Protestants, and it was...
Oh, no, the Protestant bread, not a Protestant sandwich with, like, the Catholic
Catholics
in the middle.
Okay. So, sure.
Okay.
And there was a big divide between the peoples on what to do and how to do it, and the Catholics were... And the Protestants were fighting each other about what to do and how to go about... either staying with England or going away from England.
Jesus would not want that fighting to
happen. And there were walls put up, checkpoints where, you know, it was really ugly. It's similar to the Berlin Wall, but not as nearly permanent or as widely known. So it's not as famous. But there were bombings and lots of people died. Thousands of people died, most of whom were just innocent civilians in these bombings and in trying to separate Ireland from England and the two peoples fighting against each other. And a lot of that has to do with what has been noted in this episode, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army. The Irish Republican Army was established in the early teens, the 19-teens. It's a faction of, at the time, volunteers who were trying to separate Ireland from England.
Okay.
And at that time,
so they were Catholic.
They were Catholic, and at that time, all of Ireland, not just Northern Ireland, all of Ireland was part of the United Kingdom. And the two big groups in Ireland in the early teens are the political wing, which is Sinn Féin, and then the more military wing, which was the IRA.
Okay.
And they fought against the English and the Easter Rebellion and all that stuff. And the IRA, led by Michael Collins, one of the people who helped separate Ireland from England. And then the Sinn Féin was head up by Éamon de Valera, who became the first president of Ireland. So they did all this. They actually ended up getting in a civil war. They couldn't decide what to do who was going to run the country.
Oh my gosh.
So as soon as they won independence, the Irish got into civil war. Who was going to do what? And eventually in the 60s, the IRA split. And the IRA split between people who were traditionalists who didn't want to have any more conflict.
Yeah, they were like, we won.
Yeah, and then other people who wanted conflict, and it was a whole thing. And what we saw, who did what they did, was the Provisional Irish Republican Army.
Kind of sounds like 2020 U.S.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
But, no, not like that extreme, but just in the sense
that is
be political.
That is an extremely basic version of the Troubles and the IRA. Irish independence, Northern Ireland, how it was split, because that was the deal. Michael Collins goes to England at the time.
Okay.
Who was to speak to Lloyd George, who was the king, and actually played by Jared Harris, I think, in the Jared Harris in the first season of The Crown. And he goes to him and says, listen, we don't want to be with you anymore. And the king says, okay, fine. You can have Southern Ireland, but we keep Northern Ireland. Collins comes back and says, this is the best I could do. And everybody got pissed off. And that's how the Civil War started, because there were people that wanted the whole country to be freed. Guys like Éamon de Valera, he wanted the whole thing to be freed. And there's actually like this conspiracy theory that de Valera knew that he wasn't going to get the whole country. So he sent Michael Collins, who was seen as a hero, the Irish Republican Army that helped free the Irish, and said, yeah, you go do it, Collins. That way I don't get the bad press. There's some conspiracy theories about that, but yeah. it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So that is a very basic introduction. And I love the fact that they use this as the opening to set you up for the rest of the episode. So
very cool.
That is that, Marvin. I hope I didn't bore people to death or to tears.
You just wrapped it up just in time on the cusp of boredom, but we're good.
What do you think about this episode? We don't have to go crazy with it, because I feel like a lot of it speaks for itself.
Yeah, I mean, can you just do me a favor?
Sure.
Can you please not tell anybody that you saw me, because I'm going to get into terrible trouble.
What do you mean?
Literally what Diana says.
Yes.
And then what does he do?
Goes and tells Sarah.
Right away.
By the way, did not know that Charles was originally seeing Diana's sister.
Right.
Did not know that.
Awkward.
Despite my huge love of Diana in all things, Lady Spencer.
So they met when she was still like a young teenager. They did not really meet with her dressed up as like a nymph from from Shakespeare, but she was still dressed not in like a fancy
but
thing.
But the meet cute of it all, I think, establishes.
I loved it.
It automatically sets up real chemistry between the two actors, and it makes you want to root for it, because not only is she not supposed to be there, but she secretly is planning this, so she does run into Charles. Mm-hmm. That's what the sister says, and I find this something to root for.
Yeah,
because as we look back on it with hindsight, however long ago this was. You look at it, you're like, oh my God, no, please don't. But as you're watching it,
you're rooting for it.
And I think that's where The Crown may get in trouble.
What? That we root for Charles and Diana to get together, even though we know it's destined for a breakup?
Yes, but also I wonder, and I don't, my subtle sense of what is happening right now, I think we established in the last season that the show is definitely pro-monarchy. Like, it's definitely pro-family. Like, The Crown.
Yes. I mean, that is its title.
I know, but like...
I'm But I know what you mean.
It could be. It could take an agnostic approach. This is the crown, and this is the crap they did. But I feel like
they're really trying to humanize and make you feel.
And that is a perfect example. Is Charles right?
Yes.
I wonder how they're going to treat Diana for the rest of the season. My sense of it is that, like, they almost infantilized her a little bit in this episode in the beginning.
Yeah. She's 16.
Sure. But I wonder if they continue that so that the stuff with Charles and how eventually it ends is put in a better light as opposed to what was, you know, what's been widely reported, you know?
You know what's funny is when I went into Google to figure out how young she was when they met and how young she was when they got married, I typed in how big was the age difference between and Google filled in Anakin and Padme. So if you wanted to know what the most Googled age difference between two people is, it's Anakin and Padme, not Charles and Diana.
It's probably actually relatively the same age difference.
No.
It's not?
Anakin and Padme were a mere 5 years apart.
Really?
I mean, movie-wise, come on. Natalie Portman versus like a little kid who can maybe ride a tricycle?
I know. Little Jake Lloyd running around. He's 5 years younger than Natalie Portman.
In movies, like, I think it would have been an accurate difference. But in the... Yeah, and factually, they're supposed to only be 5 years apart. Whereas Diana and Charles... were 12 years apart. 12 years apart. So he actually got married when he was 32. And speaking of two years goes by in this episode when Charles meets Diana.
Yeah, sure.
Versus when he sees her again. It's actually a 2 year span, which is quite interesting that they did that jump. We also noticed that it seems like Charles has a few silver streaks in his hair.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
An early silver stud.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe he'll join Grombre.
And as much as I loved how they handled Diana and how like you said on our knee-jerk reactions, you said the whimsy.
Yes.
There is whimsy about her, though it does feel like planned whimsy. Like the sister says that she's referred to as Dutch because she has great things for her, and that's short for Duchess.
Yes.
Right? So it's funny. Again, it infantilizes Diana, but it also gives her real purpose. And it gives her real, like, I'm looking for the word. What is it?
Drive?
Yeah, drive, but like...
Ambition?
The ability to make choices. It really, it gives her agency.
Okay.
It gives her agency. She's the one who I feel like makes this happen. And without her actions, none of it does.
Whatever perfume she was wearing that day.
So many
pheromones.
Pheromones, not
pheromones.
Hormones.
Yeah.
So many pheromones. And as much as I love Diana, and as much as I love Gillian Anderson, I don't think yet I'm in love with her portrayal as Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, okay. I'll be real. I haven't really watched a lot of footage of Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
So I don't think I want to right now. I think I kind of just want to like sit in this Crown universe. And maybe once I'm done with the season, I will watch videos on YouTube of real Margaret Thatcher.
She sounds like Margaret Thatcher. And I'm not saying that she doesn't. She has this like the sideways thing where she holds it. Like, I don't know if it's the makeup or how she has her delivery. I'm just not used to that.
Is it because it's Scully?
Because it's Scully, I think.
You can't unsee her right now? I mean, I was able to. I didn't even know it was her when I was watching it. I think, I don't know. I can appreciate, though, that you're not fully on board with her yet. I enjoyed her, but time will tell.
Yeah. So I'm willing to go along. Okay. I think it's something that I'll settle into. I think as she probably settles into the role as it continues on. What I'm definitely not settling into, though, is Anne.
Okay, well, first, what I did like about Anne is it showed us the stark contrast of Philip's parenting. How
oh, good
off
one.
He is from Philip. How just completely, you know, well, he's from, not, I mean, sorry, from Charles.
Yes.
How Philip is from Charles. How, you know, Charles almost feels like Philip hasn't even been his father. That Mountbatten, that Dickie was mm-hmm. his father figure. And, you know, Philip goes even so far to say, and then, of course, he became your father. And I lost my father and blah, 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 blah. And then we go to Anne, who, bless her heart, she's supposed to be dry as toast and does a great job portraying that. I had no idea that she was going to be an Olympian horse person, mm-hmm. equestrian. I don't know what the actual term would be for jumping horse person, sure. but equestrian. No idea. And so it just kind of came out of nowhere to me, even mm-hmm. though I appreciate that she rides horses and maybe they've mentioned it once or twice, but I've obviously forgotten about it. But that's the only purpose I see in Anne being in this episode, aside from acknowledging that she exists. We got to see the whole family at dinner when yeah. they were all talking about Charles's lack of love life.
Yeah.
So we got to see the Queen Mother and we got to see Princess Margaret.
We also got to see too the motorcade with all the different members of the family.
Yes.
You know, the Queen and Prince yeah. Philip, and how quiet they were.
Mm-hmm.
The bickering between Anne and her husband, who she apparently off screen got married. And as we know from history, off screen, she was almost kidnapped.
So wait, that isn't going to be covered?
No.
The
wedding
second.
Is not. That's already happened.
Wait, she was kidnapped? At her wedding?
No, well, after her wedding. Not like, not wedding, and then she was kidnapped, like, after the ceremony.
Oh, man.
But, like, a few months.
I thought they were going to cover that in this show.
A few months later, there was an attempt to kidnap her by some crazy guy.
Yeah, that would have made for really interesting television.
Agreed. I would have loved to see in the wedding.
How do you know they're not covering any of this?
Because she's already freaking married.
I know she's already married, but how do you know they're not going to try to have her stolen, kidnapped?
Because by this point, it's already happened.
Well, she got over it quite well.
I know, right? And that's the thing.
Oh, you took a couple years off. Yes, Dad, because I was almost taken away.
Right.
Was she actually kidnapped?
No. A bunch of people died, actually, trying to protect her.
Okay, let me tell you, this would have been... That's what I was referring to in the beginning, that like, oh, maybe she should just disappear. Like,
right.
I thought that this was going to be something covered in the Crown season four. I mean, quite juicy.
For all I know, they may change the timeline of events for the sake of okay. artistic license.
Okay, we're not going to...
But at least, according to the history, this is what, late 70s by this point?
Yeah. 79.
Yeah. Because
it's a two-year span that
we've
gone
from. We're at 79. She get her kidnap attempt is early 70s, like 73. So I would be surprised.
The shaft.
And the fact it's almost like the show doesn't know what to do with Anne.
Agreed.
Because again, she gets married off screen, and there's no introduction.
I mean,
they
literally just said like, "Oh, it's awkward because your husband also rides horses, and he's also going to try to be an Olympian too."
Right. Right.
That's really all we got.
And then we also have the other part of the motorcade with the sister and the
Margaret?
Queen Mom Margaret. They're
yes.
in the same, and they're both sleeping.
Love it.
The dichotomy between all the different cars
yes.
is
as
excellent.
They're going to Scotland.
Yeah, right.
What a beautiful retreat that they have. I really love when they get to go to Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, you just get to see the Highlands. You get to see their activities there. And they all have kind of, they break off into those little different pods, which is pretty neat. So it was nice to be there. And then also to see Charles, where was he? Iceland?
He was in Iceland. Yes.
Iceland fly fishing or whatever?
Yes. Yep.
Dang, that looked beautiful.
And this is actually all in Scotland, by the way. They actually shot it, everything, all of it in Scotland.
They did a great job. It was. I loved also hearing how long it took for Mountbatten to get in touch with Charles over the phone.
Right, yeah.
And of course, we got to have that where he learns about his death. And Charles, of course, is not only sad for the loss, but the last conversation he had with Dickie
absolutely
was a terrible one.
Yeah, he's blaming Dickie for his own marriage,
yes.
how that was a famous
yes.
Open marriage where mm-hmm. Dickie just did whatever the hell he wanted and the wife just did whatever the hell she wanted,
yep.
but they were still married. I know we already talked about the assassination scene, so we don't have to belabor that point, but it was truly
so
beautiful.
Well done.
It was truly well-edited, shot, and written. As was this scene with Charles reading the letter and in hearing that, what we played at the beginning of this episode. But I think just as good as that was, the conversation between Philip and Charles.
When Charles is in a scene in this episode, it's one of your favorite scenes.
It's fire. It is pure fire, especially watching Tobias Menzies and Josh O'Connor go at it the way that they are.
Yes.
I mean, really excellent stuff.
It's just, it's a really interesting dynamic because, of course, Philip is fiery and strong and sure of himself and yet is showing this weakness because he is mourning Dickie, but he's also mourning the fact that he lost Dickie even long before this to Charles. Mm-hmm. And Charles, you're a grown man, the heir to the throne, obviously has now lost his pseudo-father figure. But you can still see the Philip Charles father son dynamic. Charles isn't strong to his father.
Right. He still falls within himself.
He still will do the reading. Mm-hmm. He still is okay with sharing that, you know, but he chose, you know, Charles to do it. But you do not feel there was this interesting shot, a two shot of them with Philip walking over. And actually the actor who portrays Charles is quite tall.
Yes.
He's taller than Tobias Menzies. And yet when they had these conversation shots, they were close up on their faces, mm-hmm. and there was no height difference when it was a one shot.
Right.
And I thought that was very interesting to show that even though Charles is the heir and is, you know, going to be very, very important, mm-hmm. or sorry, thought, one day in life, that on this scene, they are now seen as equals because Philip is jealous of Charles.
Right. And the funny thing is that within the monarchy, mm-hmm. technically, Charles is above Philip.
Yes.
And you feel like that should be recognized. And
but
it's
still
not.
He's like, he's a boy.
I mean, but he's his boy and he still treats him like that. Yeah. And there's another, you mentioned the level at which these two shots were, the two shot and the one shot was filmed. It was straight on.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that happens, my sense of that was that Philip was a little drunk. Like I felt like he'd been drinking.
Oh, I just didn't know if Tobias was shorter.
Well, no, I don't think any of that. But like the way that he was delivering his lines.
Yes.
And something that happens in frame when Tobias Menzies is talking, as the camera creeps up on him, it goes out of focus for like a good couple of seconds, and then it comes back into mm-hmm. focus. I thought that was such an excellent touch.
Agreed.
Whether or not that was planned or it was just a happy accident, I don't know. But if you go back and watch that conversation, his movement unfocuses the camera, and it's like that, and it stays, and then it comes back. And I just love that. As a viewer, it gives you an automatic sense of something is off.
Yes.
Something is really wrong. And it's wonky and it's destabilizing. It takes the whole conversation to a whole other level.
How do you feel about a 500-page, here's how to have my funeral? Because when we first got to that shot and there were all those pages on the table, And Philip didn't right away acknowledge what it was. Mm-hmm. I actually turned to Blake and I went, what the heck is he doing with all those papers? Like, it's just
this?
A literal table covered in like stacks of papers. But then we, of course, found out 500 pages. It made me a little nervous because I haven't put out any plans. Now, granted, I'm not as old as Mountbatten was.
True.
But goodness gracious.
500 pages, bro.
What did you plan?
You can see that he is not short of words.
No.
Another perfect example of that is, and again, this is why I feel like the threads that were dangling here are absolutely being pulled from the previous season, which is when Mountbatten refers to the previous king and his marriage.
Oh, the previous Prince of Wales?
Yeah, the previous Prince of Wales.
40 years ago.
Yes, and how he invokes that. And I love that kind of storytelling
mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't negate what we saw in season 3. It acknowledges and makes it relevant to what is happening.
Especially with that scene with his wife, the widow.
Right.
You know, with her just saying like...
They mean well. No, they don't.
No,
they don't. So watch out for them. I love that. And then not only that, but also the way that it feels like Mountbatten guilts Charles into his eventual decision. And I think that is something that the show will probably also really explore. How were Diana and Charles put together, and how did that evolve? Is that something that was born out of, at least what the show is positing, is it born out of guilt? And is it born out of duty? Because that's what Mountbatten requests of Charles in his final letter, in his final words.
That's a really interesting idea.
I know. It's because I'm Batman.
I kind of saw that whole time that we were hanging out with Charles in the car and his slow smile as, yeah, she'll do.
Yeah, but is it because she'll do because that's what is required?
Or could you see it as a sign from up above, from Mountbatten, you know?
Sure.
I don't know, but interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. So,
okay, I'm excited to binge the rest of this. I'm not going to lie. So we watched the episode last night, Sunday night. It is Monday night right now when we're recording. And I begged Blake. I was like, can we just watch episode 2 and then podcast about 1 tomorrow? And he's like, nope, we have to keep the integrity of the show. We can only watch 1 and then podcast about 1. So know that that is how we're going to be going forward.
Yes.
During this week-long binge session.
Yep.
We're interested to hear how quickly you binge this show. If you do it within the first week, email us. Let us know your opinions.
Or put it in the comments of this episode or whatever. Yeah. You know, just get in touch with us and we'll talk about it. We'll have some fun.
Yeah.
And maybe we can start putting in some listener feedback. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Hey.
We'll talk about it.
We will.
Either
All right.
way. You ready Let's to close up this bad boy? Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Let's get on to the rest. I'm ready to go watch it.
I know.
Here we go.
Thank you all so much once again to the members at jointhenerdclan.com. Those of you who are clansmen level and above, you truly have made this possible. Of course, this was asked for by our patrons when we were looking for the new show, and we wanted to make this patron specific, so we really, really appreciate you. We know that 2020 has been hard for many people here, and so for those of you who have been able to still donate out of the goodness of your hearts, or for those of you who found it to be a big enough priority that you want to donate, we really, really appreciate you.
Yeah, all you guys, like we said, make this happen. And by the way, we've had an explosion of members at jointhenerdclan.com. So more and more of you are out there trying to consume this content. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Go out, tell your friends, hey, there's this really nerdy podcast about The Crown. They do weird history lessons about the IRA, and we talk about the Queen's outfits and how she likes to bet on cabinets and all that other stuff, you know.
And don't forget, those of you who are listening, you are going to be getting a holiday card from us.
Yes.
Because you're the Klansman level and above. And if you would like to get a holiday gift from us, you need to be at the Sassenach level or above by Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, as that is when we are going to be starting to send things out.
Yes. So we'll get those out. And for those of you who are Sassenach levels and above, you'll be getting a gift as well. So we're working on it. I'm working on it, as a matter of fact. So I'm very excited about
it.
Yes. It should be a good time.
So once again, thank you all so much for tuning in. We're excited to go binge some more. And by binge, I mean watch episode 2 and then podcast about episode 2.
Yep.
Oh, we've got this, friends.
Oh, by the way, also too, if you want us to start doing some swag for The Crown, let us know, because right now our screen right here is at the Mary and Blake store. Reminded me of that. Go to the Mary and Blake store for all of your cool nerd swag, whether it's the Potterverse, Outlander, This Is Us 2, all the sayings that we have here, Mary and Blake, for the Mary and Blake brand. And if you want us to add some stuff for The Crown, I'm happy to do that.
That's right.
So,
well, on that note, my name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
Keep calm and crown on.